Welcome, this is ITE 1, Semester 2 for 2011, Module 3, Computer Assembly. And Grace has announcements.
I do! Remember that September 1st, if you are not on a payment plan, is the first week of September is your payment deadline. If you have not paid, you probably should. If you're not sure if we've gotten your payment, you should email me. We probably have, but I can run checks and everything for you. Everybody except one person who, you know who you are, if you're on a payment plan, should be making their second payment. And we, the other person, will be making their first payment in September. That's fine. We will expect to see that the first week of September. After that, we will track you down and say, why haven't you paid us? Yeah, please pay us so that we can send that money to the association so that we do not get thrown out on the street. Thank you very, very much. Second announcement.
That was ouch.
What's wrong?
I tried to turn up Ventrilo and it insisted on turning my entire headset all the way up.
Yes, that's a Windows 7 bug.
It was very loud.
We know how that happens.
Announcement for you guys. We actually haven't had this problem before, so we didn't think of it, but now we have. For extensions, please email us before lecture when an assignment is due. Do not email us days later and say, oh, by the way, I haven't done this assignment. Can I have more time? This week it's fine. We've had a few people do it. Most of you have been very good about it. But please email us before lecture, before that assignment is due, to request your extensions. Otherwise, you will not be getting them because, you emailed us days after
the
assignment.
Really? If you were in a college, your professor would laugh at you. We're nice. We won't laugh at you. We'll just say no now.
We're happy to give you extensions, but please email us before.
Before, we need to know before the actual due date of the assignment for which you'd like an extension, basically.
And you will get that extension if you email it 100% of the time. After the week, remember, after you have your second week to do an assignment, we will ask what's going on. How can we help you? What's wrong with this assignment? What can we do? What can you do? How are we going to get this done? But that's first week. That you need the extension, you need to provide no reason, and it's all good. As well, remember to check out with us if you are going on vacation, and we'll give you extra time to make up your labs.
Any questions on assignment policy? Are we horrible and unreasonable, everyone?
I probably mentioned before, but just make sure whatever email address you send labs from is the address that they will be replied to, so make sure that you're sending from an address you can access frequently, or whatever. Just another little tip. Any questions, issues, any general assignment issues, lab problems, whatever?
Just a note that there's no CaviCast tomorrow because we're at Tech Outlook. So, whatever you're all doing,
we're not here. Social, if we're going to do one. Yeah, I'll be here and we can hang out and do the social type things, if people want to do that. Alright, let me just make sure that I'm in chat.
Any questions on labs / tests /
anything
at all? Gosh, you're also very quiet.
I know, it's strange.
Are any of you still awake?
We're awake. Obviously, we've all passed.
We're awake.
Yeah, have we frightened you by our unreasonable deadline policy?
It's just been a hell of a
deadline
week.
Policy.
The power will go out in the middle of taking a test last night, even.
Oh, did
so
you get back
it's
on?
Been a great week. Yes, I did actually. It was great.
Oh,
but,
good.
But
okay.
It was scary. It was a bit scary because it was one of those times when I was a little bit distracted and was, you know, taking a little bit more time than I usually had. It's like, oh gosh, I hope it comes back quick. And it did, actually, this time.
Just redo it for you.
Now, that would be kind of nerve-wracking, though. I've never had that yet, knock on
wood. I had company over all week. It was hectic.
Fair enough.
Last week I was complaining that my browser likes to go down during quizzes, but so I reset it to
I
defaults.
I wish it was a social butterfly, but it was family.
And it didn't give me any trouble at all.
Cool. Is everybody receiving? Is everybody receiving their marks on labs? Everybody should have gotten at least a couple of marks from us.
Yeah.
Some
I'm
of
still
you...
a bit behind. I'm up to the 18th, but I'm
hey,
getting through
there.
Them. We're getting there.
Unless something just got out, I don't think I've gotten any back yet.
You've gotten the
scavenger
hunt back?
Yeah, I haven't gotten. I haven't gotten to yours yet.
You did his 1.1.2, Sean.
I did your job lab. Yeah, I did your job lab.
I don't
check your
think
spam
I got
folder.
The response. Yeah, I will.
Yeah, sometimes coffee shouldn't emails there, will go to spam.
It can always happen.
I got that
it
once.
It can happen with anything. Yeah,
I almost lost a student's lab
that, I mean,
that way.
I've gotten hundreds of messages from somebody and then had one go into spam before. Google does that once in a while.
Because I sent you your
yeah,
scavenger
so
hunt,
arbitrary.
And he sent you your 1.1.2, which I think you passed both of.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah,
I got a
did.
Scavenger hunt message. Yeah, I did see that. But yeah, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? If you have failed a lab, please try and send it back within a week or two of actually getting the message. You are meant to redo them until you get them correct. So, week or two.
And you can take as many redos as you need to. It is okay.
Yep.
We have seen blah blah lab third try, fourth try. It's okay.
Okay.
All right,
you guys,
on with the lecture
proper. If
you
haven't gotten any, and if you haven't gotten those responses, please email us and say something, because we'll send them.
If anybody's downloading from QCAT.org, you won't be for a minute.
Fair enough. All right, we're going to talk today about computer assembly. So this is putting it back together. We're assuming you've already taken it apart, which, in theory, if you've done the last lab for the chapter 2, you will have done. So when assembling a computer, it's important to stay organized and have a plan as to which order you will install components. And it's just like, you know, cooking or doing anything else that is kind of involved. You have to know how you're going to do it. You can't just be haphazard about it. You have to have an idea of where you're going and what you're doing, because otherwise it's not going to go well. Learning to assemble a computer takes practice. Grace says that the first time she installed a stick of RAM, it took her about 90 minutes, and now, after quite a bit of time, it now only takes her about 30 seconds. So it is a practice thing. And sorry I dobbed you in, but you had it written in there, so I just changed it and put it in. Before we even think about assembling a computer, we need to prepare the workspace. So make sure you have good lighting. If you're having sighted help, you still need good lighting, ventilation, and comfortable temperature. An ideal workbench is accessible from all sides and has an anti-static mat on both the table and under your feet. Many people have not gotten the pleasure to work on an ideal workbench, but apparently that's how one should happen. Keep your space and yourself organized. Use little containers, cups, or bowls to keep track of screws and small components. If you have a pill organizer, would also work well in a pinch. Just make sure that you don't get, you know, pills and screws mixed up or something. The little toolkit I have has a little container that has they give you some standard screws, and then on the other side they have little compartments to put screws into. Make sure you put components in a safe place where you won't knock them on the floor, step on them, or similar. Like I said, make sure you're organized. If you'll be reusing components, put them in an anti-static bag. Keep separate components in their own separate bags. It's not okay to put RAM in with a sound card, because you're increasing the chance of electrostatic discharge happening. So each thing should go in its own little baggie. Use a toolbox to organize your tools. Any questions so far?
How many people here have pulled apart a computer? Or put it back together, I should say.
Or both. Cora, have you have? Is that what you...
Yeah, I have.
I'm sure you have.
put one back together, and some of it was successful. And so I tried it on another one until it got successful.
Awesome. Okay, so some people have had the chance to do it. Like I said, we've got recordings if you absolutely need to get the lab done and you're petrified to do it. But I was petrified to do it. When I finally did, it wasn't too bad. No, I did have sighted help, and you probably, if you have the option to your first time, you might want to. Just so you make sure you know, yes, this is actually what you're feeling is this component, and this is how it goes in. My dad and I almost couldn't get the power supply out. Even he almost couldn't get it out. That was fun. Cases come in many form factors. Anybody want to talk about what a case's form factor refers to? Type your name into chat.
Size of the case.
That would have been
Gary. Yep, that's
Gary.
One of them. Yeah, that's fine. Gary, that's one of them. There's two other bits, though. Marlene?
The size of the motherboard and the kind of power supply?
Absolutely. Those are all related to the form factor. The motherboard shape and size, the power supply shape and size, and the case it's, and the, I just broke it, didn't I? No, I... Okay, I got it. I'm sorry. Alright. So, cases can open in many different ways, and they can either use screws or they can be screwless. The screwless cases are a pain because they're very difficult to tell what magic things you're supposed to do to actually get them open. And even sighted people that have a manual still have trouble with some of these screwless cases. If that's it. Dell, anyone? So if you have a case with screws and you have the option of replacing them with thumb screws, that's something you might want to think about. Grace mentioned that that's something that she does on some of the computers she works regularly, and it sounds like a good idea. These are screws with large heads that you can remove without a screwdriver, so you just turn them with your hands.
Just go to eBay and buy tons of them. They're so useful.
Yeah, I bet you can. Yeah, I bet you they are. Here are some examples of ways that a case can be opened. The computer case cover can be removed as one piece, where the top and the sides come off. The cover can be removed as one piece, or the top and side panels of the case can be removed. And sometimes the top of the case may need to be removed before the side panels can be taken off. The most common design is where the two side panels are removable and the top is not removed. If you're unsure how your case opens, check its manual or the manufacturer's website. Installing the power supply in the case. As we said before, the power supply is a big heavy box that usually can be installed only one way. Power supplies have fans that vibrate and may cause screws to loosen over time. Make sure to use all of the screws that come with your power supply and tighten them well. It seems that unless there are meant to be extra screws included in something you're putting together, having some leftovers probably not what you want to happen. So that holds true with these as well. Lynn?
Yes, I have a question. When you said to check the manufacturer's website, is this like the general suggestion, or is it there actually actual valuable information for a blind user on the manufacturer's website? Like, do they have more than just the same diagram that you'd have in the print? Like, have you ever found actual descriptive information?
I've never actually tried doing this. Like, are you talking about, like, Cooler Master, let's say, for their case or whatever?
Well, if it says, you know, check the manufacturer's website for how to open the case, right? Do they ever, like, actually describe what to do? You know, like...
You have to look and see. Could you unkey, please?
Yeah, so you don't know.
She's...
Sorry, I'm sorry.
You know what I do? I go to Google and I type in open whatever case. And honestly, 9 times out of 10, I will find a forum post with somebody describing in great detail how to do this, because there are no pictures on the forums. They won't put up a picture. They will describe exactly how to do it. And we have actually opened many a case.
That's a good idea.
Doing that. Does that help?
Google is your friend.
That's
that
a
helps
great
a lot,
idea.
Actually, thank you.
Also, there are YouTube videos, and they often talk a lot in the YouTube videos. So they're not as good as the forums, but often they'll go, okay, there is 4 screws at the back of this that we've got to take out here. Now we slide this back.
Then I have to do it.
Yeah, and actually some of the people are quite verbose on the YouTube videos. So don't discount YouTube videos.
My dad was telling... That's where I get some printer sounds, and actually I found another daisy wheel I'm going to include when we get there. But my dad actually had, my brother had a game console that broke, and like the joystick broke, and my dad Googled, and this like 13-year-old kid had taken his apart and on YouTube and was showing people how to fix it, because apparently it was a common PlayStation whatever issue. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
We had a kid, does anybody remember those Rubik's puzzles that you fold, you link and unlink the rings, and you fold them and flip them backwards and forwards? We had a 13-year-old kid that used to repair those for $30. You'd give him the puzzle and all the bits of fishing line, and he'd put them back together. So it's amazing what people can fix. So,
wow.
Yeah. Okay, so here are the following set of steps that and these are testable on how to put a power supply in. So, to install a power supply, insert the power supply into the case. Align the holes in the power supply with the holes in the case. Secure the power supply to the case using the proper screws.
Suggestion. Little jeweler screwdriver into holes of case and see if power supply lines up and it goes into hole in power supply. Careful.
That actually makes a lot of sense. The next step we're going to talk about is to attach the RAM, CPU, and heatsink to the motherboard. Now, Cisco recommends that we attach these things to the motherboard before we put it into the case. My understanding is that Carrie and Grace are not particularly happy with this recommendation.
Grace is the only one who's not happy with this. That's okay. She's allowed to be unhappy with it.
Absolutely.
I thought I took that out of the note.
Well, it just says Cisco recommends that the CPU, heatsink, and RAM be put in.
I actually broke a system board once doing it Grace's way, which is why I don't do it that way anymore. I actually succeeded in bending some of the case frame when I was inserting RAM and shorted the board against the back of the case. So I do them on the table
now. Then you're doing it the other way. No, I have done them both ways. I like to do it in the case if I'm doing it on my own, because I'm not going to push hard enough to actually hurt anything because I am a wuss. So,
but that'd be so. It would be. I think their point is it would be so easy to do that they would just rather not have that happen. So,
if you're
saying,
like bodybuilder or something, yeah.
To be fair, when you're socketing the CPU fans on the older chips, and it's not true for the new ones, but you do have to have you and your 6 mates leaning on the flat-bladed screwdriver to push the spring clip down over the other side, and accidents have happened, and boards have been broken. And what they're arguing against here is that if you put too much stress and actually bend the board, it's possible for you to get an undetectable microfracture, which will then result in your computer being really unreliable in weird ways, depending on what the temperature it is and who last moved the computer.
That people can't figure out.
Yeah, so they're just sort of saying, play it safe. So if you do it in the case and you do it Grace's way, we will not be held responsible. And if it works better for you, that's excellent. But the notes say that we do the motherboard assembly, disassembly, RAM, CPU outside the case. And all
before
of the books
we
say that
put
too.
It in the case, yeah. Okay. Before touching a CPU, make sure you have very clean and dry hands. CPUs are very sensitive. When handling the CPU and motherboard, always wear an anti-static wrist strap, and if possible, work on an anti-static mat if you have one available. Try not to touch the bottom of the CPU, because this is where the contacts are located. If you are installing a used CPU, you need to clean the top with isopropyl alcohol to remove the thermal compound and apply a fresh layer. You want a very thin layer that covers the entire CPU. This is something a sighted person might assist you with, as too much is not a good thing. I've heard that that's one of the things. It's just easier to get someone who can see to do it because, I don't know. Sounds like it would be something I wouldn't be comfortable doing.
The big problem with silicon compound is that it's not water soluble, so washing it off your hands is really difficult. Sorry, go ahead, Lynn.
Oh, well, that was sort of my question. I was going to say, is it something you can touch? Is there any reason why it's like not poisonous or like trying to touch super glue or whatever?
In large quantities, it's potentially carcinogenic, but so is living. So I think it's relatively safe. But to be honest with you, it's really icky, gicky, yucky stuff. So if you have sensory issues, it can really be unpleasant to have it on your fingers. But you'll find out soon enough once you actually get the stuff out of the tube. But no, it will not kill you. It's just tacky and sticky and not water-soluble and stuff. So I can do it, I just don't enjoy getting it on my fingers too much.
Do they give you little, like, thingies to apply it?
No, not usually. You gotta actually go get blade slash, you know, whatever you're gonna use.
Most of the new CPU fans actually have a little peel-back sticker, and then the goo is already applied, so it just depends. Check the documentation that comes with your stuff, because it might already be on there. Yeah, ours were.
That's nice.
I got a fan once, and I paid $2 for them to apply the heating, and they did probably worse than I would. It looked like it had just splotched all over the bottom of that fan. They must have been blind and spun them in circles and gotten drunk before actually applying it, because it was a really badly done job.
Oh my god. Wow. And I paid extra for that? Yeah.
I paid $2 for that.
For that?
Well, wasn't that a problem on one of the later iPhones or something, that they had really sloppy jobs on that? Or maybe it was the iPad. It was some Apple product that I'd read a couple interviews, or not interviews, but I mean blogs posts about, that were saying it was like this really sloppy, gloppy thermal paste job.
Corey.
With the reference to the Apple thing, it was the latest versions of the MacBook Pro. Apparently they'd done a sloppy build on a couple of the first releases, all the way through from the thermal paste right on up to the application of putting stuff, you know, the cases together. They were sharp edged and stuff.
Nice. They're not perfect, guys. Them being Apple.
So that's why Jobs quit today, huh?
Well, I don't think it's that, but he did. Okay, anyone remember what type of locking mechanisms are used to secure CPUs in the modern computers these days? Anybody have a remember, type your name into chat, something? Corey.
It's a locking plate and a lever that kind of puts pressure on it.
Yeah, that's true. Do you remember what it's called? Because there's a name for it.
Give Bert a go.
Bert, how about you?
Zero force insertion or something like that?
Yay!
Yes, it's a zero insertion force or ZIF socket. So before we install the CPU, you got to make sure you know how the ZIF socket works. To install the CPU, line up pin 1 of the CPU with pin 1 on the motherboard. For us, this usually means line up the cutoff corner on the CPU with the one on the motherboard. Doing this ensures that the orientation notches on the CPU are aligned with the orientation keys on the CPU socket. Place the CPU gently into the socket, close the CPU load plate, and secure it in place by closing the load lever and moving it under the load lever retention tab. Apply a small amount of thermal compound to the CPU and spread it evenly if it has not been done already. Follow the application instructions provided by the manufacturer of the thermal compound, I'm assuming. The heatsink / fan assembly is a two-part cooling device, and you guys looked at some of these in your labs, but here's more about how they actually look and what they do. The heatsink draws heat away from the CPU. The fan moves the heat away from the heatsink, and the heatsink fan assembly itself usually has a 3-pin power connector that attaches to the motherboard. I'm trying to see. And as we said before, if we are reusing one of these, what should we do first? Anybody?
How many people have read this?
Yeah, has any of you read this chapter?
I did.
Yes, I read it.
Yeah, I took the test.
Hey, good for you.
You've already taken the test for...
Cool.
I've read the chapter.
That's when my question went out. It wasn't cool. That was scary. It was like a lesson in not getting ahead of myself.
It's all right. The question was just,
have
you read it?
If we're going to reuse a CPU?
Yes.
You have to wash it with isopropyl alcohol to get off the old cooling compound.
Absolutely. Fair enough. To install the heatsink fan assembly, align the retainers with the holes on the motherboard. Place the heatsink fan assembly onto the CPU socket, being careful not to pinch the CPU fan wires. Tighten the retainers to secure the assembly in place. Connect the heatsink fan assembly power cable to the header on the motherboard. This is usually three little pins sticking up fairly close to the CPU socket. Any questions on that before we talk about RAM? Lynn?
Yeah, when the CPUs come with fans, do they just come with, or are they actually sort of already kind of attached to each other and then you don't have to deal with that compound?
No, actually what happens is you've got two separate components. You've got the CPU, and you may, if it's a new one, if it's a kit, you're probably going to have a little thing to peel off, and that's going to have your compound on it, more than likely, because you just bought a kit. And you put the CPU in the ZIF socket, grabbing the edges very gently. This is fairly feelable. You've got the cutoff corner, and you can feel exactly how it goes in. If you're worried, have a sighted person check your work, but I've never screwed one of these up because they are very tactile and very feelable. Now, putting on the fan is the more difficult part. With the AMDs, I actually can't do it because it's quite fiddly. The Intels are quite a bit easier. You just lock the four locking screws down, and you put that on top, and it will just fit and just go. You plug the fan header in, and you're good.
Question, have I put up Tom's and Ellie's and Brian's computer assembly yet on the website? Has anybody seen it up there yet?
I haven't. I didn't see it last time I looked, but that was a while ago.
Okay, I'll put that up. There's actually three blindies that took apart a computer, and it was recorded with an Olympus. So I'll put that up later today, and that might be quite insightful for you, because Brian actually takes it apart with Ellie and Tom Decker. So they actually take it apart and put it all back together. So that might be insightful for some of you, because I'm sure there's all sorts of tips in there.
Yeah, that'd be good. Okay, before you install RAM, check the manufacturer's website to make sure it is compatible with your motherboard. And we've talked about... I'm sorry? Alright, if you need to... I heard someone key up. If you need to say something, let us know. So make sure it's compatible with the motherboard you're using, and we've looked a little bit in our labs about how to do that. So you have a better idea. To review, RAM is temporary storage for the computer while it is on. RAM is volatile. Can anyone tell me what that means? Mark.
That means when you turn off the computer, the RAM forgets everything that it knew.
Absolutely. It goes bye-bye. Whereas non-volatile is memory that doesn't do that when power is lost. So when the computer is powered off, RAM loses its contents, as we said. why might we want to install more RAM into a computer? Now, Mark, you're out because you've already answered. Corey?
To increase the efficiency of the operating system?
Yeah, to make things run a little quicker. Absolutely. That'll keep it from grinding the hard drive so much. So, to install the RAM, you're going to align the notches on the RAM module to the keys in the slot and press down until the side tabs click into place. And you can hear it when that happens. And if you've got it the wrong way, then it will probably need to be turned around. Feel to make sure the RAM is aligned properly and make sure the clips are actually in place. If you plan on taking a computer, this will make sense when you actually look at it and you'll say, oh, that's what they were talking about. Because it's actually pretty neat how those go in. Now it's time to actually install the motherboard. We use plastic and metal standoffs that go between the case and the motherboard so that the motherboard does not touch the bottom of the case. And why would that be important, anyone? Actually, I'm going to have someone else answer because you've been answering a lot of these. So someone other than Corey. Sorry, I'm just being mean today.
Nah. Go ahead.
I'm confused. Who's, Mark, do you want to go?
Yeah, I could go with that. I think that the motherboard has to be separated from the case for electrical insulation. I don't think
absolutely. If they touch, the motherboard can short out. Yeah, if the motherboard and case touch each other and they're both metal, they're going to short out. So we're going to only use the standoffs that align with the holes on the motherboard. Hang on, let me do that again. So only use the standoffs that align with the holes on the motherboard or it will not seat properly. So, you know, just use the bits that they give you. To install the motherboard, install standoffs in the computer case, then align the I/O connectors on the back of the motherboard with the openings in the back of the case. So when you're actually feeling the back of your computer, you're feeling the back of the motherboard with these connectors on it. You're actually feeling, because they've lined that up with the holes on the back, that's actually what you're looking at, which is kind of cool to think about. Align the screw holes of the motherboard with the standoffs. Insert all of the motherboard screws. And then tighten all of the motherboard screws. Any questions?
Just a point that you've got to make sure you've got the correct backplate for the system board that you're mounting, and that's the first thing you do. Because once you've got the board mounted in the case, you're not getting that backplate into the case ever. And yes, I've had computers where people have done this. So get that backplate correct, like the actual backplate for the serial ports, parallel ports, keyboard ports, and everything. Do that first.
Yeah, how would you actually go about, what would be the best way to actually go about making sure those match when you're actually buying stuff? Like, you're not going to actually know until you get it.
They come with the system board. They come with the system board. So, when you buy the case, it doesn't usually have the backplates installed. The backplate actually comes with the system board. And you have to put that backplate in the case before you mount the system board. That's the little backplate for the keyboard, sound, you know, all that sort of stuff. Not the.
Oh, okay. Oh, so the case just has the giant hole where everything comes through the back? Okay.
The empty shells.
Yeah. I didn't take mine apart that far, believe me. Well, this was a Dell monstrosity anyway. Now that we have the motherboard in place, it's time to install the internal drives. What are some examples of internal drives? Let's go ahead and shout these out, because these are pretty straightforward.
HDD.
Yep, hard drive, very good. CD-ROM, very good. Floppy drive, very good. And going a ways back, our zip drives, our super disk drives, you know, internal tape, all kinds of fun stuff. I remember when zip disks were the thing, man. So hard drives, optical drives, floppy drives, and the other kinds we've been kind of talking about here. The types of bays that the storage drives are installed into is testable. So, here we go. A hard drive goes into an internal 3.5-inch bay, which means that the hard drive is not accessible from the front of the case. Can you imagine what a nightmare that would be? And how many odd things would happen if the hard drive was accessible from the front of the case and people could play with it? That would be bad. So that makes it an internal drive bay. Really? That's different.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, some old computers that I saw at school had these keys. And you put the keys in and pop out came the hard drive. So, yeah.
Oh, now that's different. Now, my dad's Tandy, he had a TRS-80, and it had an external 5-meg drive, and you used a key to turn the drive off and on. That you talking about keys made me think of that. That was an odd.
Most
computer.
Of the computers you see, you're not gonna have external drives that can be popped out externally. Those are either on like mass produced computers for like schools or something, or really big server.
Crazy servers would do that, probably. So this is in your test to install a hard drive. Actually, I think that was referring to the bit about the internal drive bay. But you might want to pay attention because I'm trying to remember now. I did this on Monday. But to install a hard drive, you're going to position the HDD hard drive so that it is aligned with the 3.5-inch drive bay. Insert it into the drive bay so that the screw holes in the drive line up with the screw holes in the case. And secure the HDD to the case using the proper screws. Keep in mind that some systems, like some of the Dells I've seen, use drive rails, which are screwed to the sides of the hard drive, and then the rails and the whole drive slide into the bays. This works really well until you lose the rails. Then you're screwed. The Dell I took apart was like this, and so is the other older Dell that's sitting next to me. Floppy drives and optical drives are installed in external bays, which means they are accessible from the front of the case so that you can insert and remove media. And these are 5.25-inch drive bays. An optical drive, as we know, is a storage device that reads and writes information to CDs, DVDs, and Blu-rays, also known as BDs. These drives can either be PATA, using a 4-pin Molex for power and a 40-pin 80-wire PATA ribbon cable for data, or SATA, which uses a 15-pin SATA power connector and a 7-pin SATA data cable. An optical drive is installed into an external 5.25-inch drive bay, as I said, and that's testable. To install an optical drive, position the optical drive so that it aligns with the 5.25-inch drive bay. Insert the optical drive into the drive bay so the optical drive screw holes align with the screw holes in the case. And secure the optical drive to the case using the proper screws. And those go through the front, is that correct, Carrie?
Sorry, no, nothing to add.
when you put a floppy drive in, don't you put it in through the front of the case?
Yeah, generally. And you put optical drives in through the front of the case generally as well, because it's a bit hard
That's
to push drives
meant.
Through a power supply.
Yeah. Fair enough. John, you had something.
Just a question. With the internal bays, is there ever a standard place they're located? I'm assuming the external ones are, if you think of your standard, like a tower case, they're the ones, if it's standing up, they're oriented, you know, horizontally where the CD and DVD drives and so forth. Are the internal ones, relative to that, are they ever in a standard position, or does it vary depending on the case?
I honestly have no idea. Do you guys know?
Usually
I would imagine
below,
it would vary.
I think. I've generally seen them like below. I just saw this old computer, and there was just like a stack of a bunch of different drive bays, a lot more than probably most people would use. And the internal ones were below the external ones. There was a whole, there was like 5 3.5s, and then a couple big ones, and then one floppy external up top too.
Wow.
And I've seen a couple others like that, but I haven't opened many.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure on that, because I've not taken very many apart. But yeah, it would make logical sense that it would be lower down in the case than the CD drive and the floppy drive, because the CD drive's right at the top, so the floppy drive can't be all the way, or the hard drive probably isn't going to be up there. A floppy disk drive, FDD, is a storage device that reads and writes information to a floppy disk. These use a 4-pin Berg connector for power and a 34-pin floppy drive cable for data. A floppy drive is installed in a 3.5-inch external drive bay so that you can again take the disk out and put it in. To install a floppy drive, position the FDD so that it aligns with the 3.5-inch drive bay. Insert the FDD into the drive bay so that the screw holes align on the drive with the screw holes in the case, and secure the floppy drive to the case using the proper screws. The final components to be installed are the adapter cards. And do we remember what, I'll give you that one. These allow you to add or enhance the functionality of your computer. Let's name some examples of adapter cards. Anybody?
Audio, video.
VGA.
Yep, graphics. Audio and video cards. Yep, graphics is the same as video. Yep.
Network
Marlene,
cards.
You had one? Yep, network cards.
Sound is the same as audio.
Yep, networking. We could also have wireless networking, couldn't we? And TV tuner cards and capture cards and all kinds of other ones. I/O port cards, there's lots of them. When picking out an adapter card, make sure that your computer has a compatible expansion slot for the type of card that you want. Motherboards today come with PCI and PCIe slots. PCIe is PCI Express, of course. PCIe slots come in lengths of 1... This says 1, 4, 8, and 16. I think there's a 2 in there, isn't there, Carrie? Isn't there X2?
I could be full of it. And there might only be 1, 4, 8, and 16. This has happened before.
There might... Okay.
We'll go with the notes on this one until we can find otherwise. So 1, 4, 8, and 16.
1, 4, 8, and 16. These numbers also have to do with speed. So the higher the number, the longer and... Hang on, this is... The higher the number, the longer and more powerful the slot in the card would be. So video cards go into a PCI X16 slot. So that means they're longer and they've got more power to them. For all other types of cards, check which slot type it is compatible with. You can put any shorter card into a longer slot, but you cannot put a longer card into a shorter slot, for example. So if you have, I guess this the theory is then that if you have an X4 card, you could put it into an X8, because that's the card would be smaller. But you can't put an X16 into the X8 because it's too short. And it's not powerful enough anyway. I'm just... That's the impression I'm getting here. I've never actually seen these beasties before. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. The X1 slots are about an inch long. The X4 slots are about 2 inch long. The X3 slots are about 2.5 inches long. And the X16s are about 3.5-4 inches long. You can actually feel the difference in the lengths. There's quite a differentiation in lengths.
That's kind of nice, actually. That's cool. To install an expansion card, align it to the appropriate expansion slot on the motherboard. Press down gently on the card until the card is fully seated, and secure the PC mounting bracket to the case with the appropriate screw. Now, in the computer I took apart, the only adapter card was a modem, and it sort of went into this metal thing that had a slot in it, and then you put that into the computer somewhere. It was weird, but yeah, it's kind of weird putting those cards in, because you almost feel like they're not going to go, and you push and they go in, but you almost feel like, oh my god, I don't think this is going to work. But it does.
You'll also find that Virgin slots can be quite tight, so if you've never put a card into a slot before, I'm saying this graphically so you'll remember that you've got to shove pretty hard before it'll slide in, so watch out for tight slots that have
that
been
makes
used
sense.
Before.
Don't use Vaseline.
Absolutely
no,
not.
No, no, very, no. And that's like a lot of things. I've seen where some things I get, the batteries are real hard to put in and take out until you've done it a few times. My leather case for the Braille Sense that I bought third party was certainly like that. That was really difficult to put in. I remember Grace and I complaining about that because we got the same one. Anyway, after all of the components of the computer are installed, it's time to connect the internal cables. So these include the case leads, which operate the power buttons and the LED lights, the power cables, and the data cables. The motherboard has power cables just like every other component. And an ATX motherboard has either a 20 or 24 pin power socket, and it can also have a 4 or 8 pin auxiliary socket. And they also put AUX in parentheses, which Dawes says as O, so be careful. A 20-pin connector can be used with a 24-pin socket because it's just a little bit shorter, and apparently that's okay. These are large rectangular connectors, and they're pretty distinct, actually. To connect them, you're going to align the 20-pin ATX power connector to the socket on the motherboard, and gently press down on the connector until the clip clicks into place. Taking those out, at least on the system I saw, was a heck of a lot harder than putting it in. Align the 4-pin ATX power connector, the auxiliary one if you've got one, to the socket on the motherboard, and gently press down on the connector until the clip clicks into place. It's basically just a smaller version of the 20 or 24-pin. It's just a little baby one. SATA connectors, and I've never seen these because the system I was working on had IDE, so I've never seen these. SATA power connectors are 15-pin connectors used to connect any SATA device. What are some SATA devices? Anybody? Mark.
Hard disk.
Yes, hard disks. Very good. Any other ones?
CD-ROMs?
Yes, newer CD-ROMs are SATA. Very good. So those are the big ones.
Don't upgrade your primary SATA drivers once you've installed Service Pack 1 on Windows 7, as Grace and I found out last night. Grace,
I have a very broken computer right now.
It doesn't boot up anymore.
What happened?
We tried to update the SATA drivers because it was showing up standard PCI SATA controllers, and I'm like, well, the AMD ones will run it at 6 gigabits per second, let's put those in. And we got one set in, and there were still two standard hard disk controllers sitting in there, and we forced the other driver in, and then it rebooted and didn't. Watch out for that.
Oh, dear.
We're hopefully fixing that this afternoon if some eyes come over.
That's going to be fun.
Oh, no, it's a reformat and reinstall job. There's no two ways about that.
Oh.
It's easy. It's just that's how it is.
Ooh, all right. These connectors can be on the same circuit board, so you can have for the different drives, I'm guessing it says. So, Molex connectors have how many pins? And what kind of things do they connect? So how many pins first?
4.
Yep, 4. Very good. And what kind of things do we connect with those?
Floppy
disk.
No, that's
no,
not right.
Oh,
hard disks and optical drives. Floppy drives have their own special one. Remember what that one is? for power?
That would be Berg.
Absolutely. They have a Berg connector. Some drives, this is very important. Some drives have both types of connectors. So some drives will have a Molex and a SATA connector. Do not use both at the same time. This was finally put into the official notes. And why might this be a bad idea, guys? Anybody know?
You only need to draw power from one source.
Absolutely. So if you do that, you will have the magic smoke. And it will not be fun. Too much power. Tim the Toolman Taylor knows all about that. Too much power. So, we have... How many pins does the Berg connector have?
Four.
Yes, and we talked about what it does, so we won't go back over that. Alright, now we're going to talk about plugging these in. Plug the SATA power connector into the hard drive. Plug the Molex power connector into the optical drive. Plug the 4-pin Berg power connector into the floppy drive. Connect the 3-pin fan power connector to the appropriate fan header on the motherboard, according to the motherboard manual. Plug the additional cables from the case into the appropriate connectors, according to the motherboard manual. These are very difficult without sight, so you may need sighted assistance with this. Especially if your customer wants their LED lights to actually work. If you can, most people who are blind think, okay, if I get the power button and I can turn the thing on, then you know I don't need to worry about the lights. But your customer might really appreciate those lights. While we're talking about lights, the hard drive activity light is not the thinking light. I like that, but I also like to point it out because it amused me when Carrie told me about it.
Yes, don't say that to your customer, please.
And I have to make a phone go away.
While you're waiting for Sean's phone to go away, why don't you consider Discovery, Cavi's incredibly exciting network course. Learn what those plugs, tunkers, and network holes are for on your home network. Discovery, coming
tunkers,
to
yes.
A curriculum near you.
Near you. All right, my phone is off. Okay. So next we're going to talk about data cables. And the data cables run from the devices to the motherboard, so the different drives and stuff, to the actual motherboard. The PATA cable is a flat, wide ribbon cable. Do you guys remember how many pins and wires these have? Corey?
40 pins and 80 wires.
Absolutely. 40 pins, 80 wires. Very good. Virtual lollipop. And the PATA cable, interesting. The PATA cable connects, of course, your optical drives.
It is
actually
a ribbon cable.
I was writing to. It is, yes, it is.
And actually, sometimes
did
you'll
say
get
it
these
was?
Bunched up. You said cable? That's interesting.
I said Knable.
Oh,
as
okay.
In Abel Knable
gotcha,
or Evil
gotcha.
Knievel.
I just kind of zoned out.
Well, last night I wrote HeatSlink when I was messaging Grace last night and we died. So that was funny. But yeah, they do get really bunched up and scary.
Actually, no. Sometimes they'll bunch them up and put them in a cable that is not a ribbon cable. So it's this weird, it looks like a regular cable and isn't a ribbon cable. The ribbon cable's kind of balled up inside of it. It's really weird. It's fancy.
That's weird.
Interesting.
Well, the one I saw, the ribbon cable was actually tucked behind these little little hook things. So it actually kept it fairly neat. So, but you also had to sort of work it out of these little... You'd have to pull it to the side out of these little slot-looking thingies that they had come up with. So a PATA cable itself... I almost did it again. Has three connectors! One for the motherboard and two for the drives. Okay, so the drive on the end of the cable is the master drive, and if a drive is connected in the middle, it is the slave drive. This assumes that cable select is being used on the drives, and that they're not specifically jumpered for one or the other. So, and oftentimes it doesn't matter which of the ends plugs into the motherboard.
Now most of the time it doesn't matter. And also now most of the time it doesn't matter about your stuff's going to be cable select. If you want to completely and utterly be done with any of these problems, and you've got SATA connectors on your drives, use them.
Just make sure your operating system supports SATA. Windows XP.
Windows XP
is a bit
Service
strange
Pack
about that.
3 does.
Which is great when you're except I know people
I
who have
Service
done
Pack
reinstalls
2 does.
Have had issues if they're installing
SATA.
Something that doesn't.
Windows XP supporting SATA.
It doesn't support all of the SATA chipsets, and you've actually got to slipstream it into the install image. It does do the Intel and some of the VIA, but you're still better to feed them in via the F6 method off a floppy disk for XP. I'm not kidding you. It's either a floppy disk or slipstream the drivers into the image. 7 will take them off a flash drive. Thank you, Microsoft.
Yeah, that was good of them. If the keying on one end is different to the keying on the middle and the other end, that's the end that's going to go into the motherboard if they're keyed differently. Also, if two of the connectors are closer together and they're... if they're closer together on the cable, then they're probably the ones meant for the drives. To install, you line pin 1 on the cable up with pin 1 on the motherboard. Pin 1 is usually on the side towards the power connector on the drive. Most of your modern PATA connectors are keyed so that you can feel how they are supposed to be installed. Many computers have 2 PATA controllers, so you can have up to 4 PATA drives. And in my Dell over here, I've actually got 2 CD drives on what would be the secondary controller, and I have actually had at one time 4 PATA drives internally. Now I've only got 3. And the other CD drive that's not a burner never gets used anymore. The SATA drive, as we've said, has 7 pins, and it connects the SATA drives. Yes, go ahead. Bert.
I'm, like, the cables are the thing that's got me sketchy here, trying to get them all figured out in my head right. I got it right yesterday, but I didn't think I would. It's the IDE hard drives. Those also use a PATA data cable, correct? Or am I...
PATA and IDE are
EIDE and PATA are the same thing.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure. Thanks.
Yep, they're the same. Confusing, yes, but they're the same. So a floppy data cable... I'm sorry.
Is SATA like a whole lot faster? Or
oh yeah.
What's the
It's the new
oh, yeah.
It's serial ATA. It's faster, it's newer, it's easier to plug in, it's better. Use it if you possibly can.
Oh, it's way easier to plug in, no doubt about that.
Although it's very easy, if you actually put any downward pressure on the SATA cable, it's easy to actually break the top plastic retaining latch out of the top of the cable, and then you have to go get a new cable because it doesn't plug into the drive properly anymore,
what
it just wobbles.
What are you
wobbles.
Doing to your SATA cable?
When you've got 8 of them stacked one on top of the other and there's about as much room as there is to move in an unemployment line, it's quite easy to accidentally nudge down on one and you hear a little
nice.
And then it snaps.
Oh, I bet that's fun. Lynn. Go ahead.
Okay, now I feel really stupid. But you said it's serial, and I thought, like, serial, like, in external cables, the reason it was slower because it's only transmitting information, like, one bit at a time or something like that, and that was the outdated mode.
That's right.
They
got smarter.
So why
is SATA serial and faster?
The reason is that they figured out how to actually send twice the amount of data by putting it on
can
the rising edge.
Can you unkey while you're not speaking?
The rising edge and the falling edge of the clock
Thank
signal,
you.
And then they came out with some spread spectrum stuff and some multiplexing stuff and all this really funky stuff. So basically they've managed to get 3 gigabits per second. No, 3 gigabits. Yeah, 3 gigabytes per second. Well, the newest SATA ones are 6 gig, but most of them are 3. The SATA 2.5 is 6, but the SATA 2s, which is what you usually see, are 3. Go over these serial cables very high speed, very quickly.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and remember, the new standard of serial, your old serial ports, the newest incarnation of serial is Universal Serial Bus USB. So that is true in the older parallel was faster than serial, but now your USB is serial and your SATA is serial because they have gotten smarter.
RS-232C is the old one, and these don't have the same thingy, but yeah, that's why. That was quite cool explanation, Carrie.
Thanks.
It's probably worth mentioning though, that the maximum length for SATA cables is a meter, so don't go running SATA cables like from one end of your house to the other, so just watch the length specifications. People have tried it. Like, people will run cables as long as they possibly can. Like those printer extenders that put your printer 30 meters away from your computer. Don't do it.
And I'm sure a lot of the... Never mind. I'm sure a lot of them are blind people doing this. Which is dangerous, but... Do what was that intro?
Attenuation is a reality.
You're right.
I mean, blind people with wireless headphones and wireless keyboards are not what we're talking about, which is where you're like, I'm cool and blind and I don't need to see my monitor and I'm sitting in the bedroom while my computer is next door. That's not what we're talking about here. We're just talking about running cables far longer than they're intended to run, like 20, 30 meter parallel cables.
Makes you wonder if the standard doesn't let it go that wide. You wonder why people are even selling them that long, if it's just kind of doomed to failure. I don't know why.
Boosters. Yes, Lynn.
Okay, I'm one of those, and I wondered what, I mean, I don't now, but I had this very, very long parallel cable that I used for a Braille printer because he wanted the printer in a place where you weren't going to have to be listening to it while I was printing, and it worked fine, so I wonder, like, was I damaging the printer doing that?
No,
it just wouldn't have gone if it was too long.
Yeah, you run the risk of the data getting corrupted in transit and the Braille coming out a bit funny if there was electromagnetic interference. I mean, you can usually get away with about, I think it's 5 or 10 meters, but some people really take them a long, long way.
15 feet, I think.
I think it is 15 feet for parallel. You do need special boosters and stuff if you're going to throw it further than that. If it worked for you, that's good, but if it didn't work, then the first thing we'd say is, sorry, your cable's too long. We had acoustic silencing boxes for the...
We could get a Jedi Print Direct. They have a thing that takes... It goes into a parallel cable and turns that into... And then you it's a box. You plug your parallel cable into it, and then you plug your RJ45 into it, and we used them at school to connect the Juliet Pro 50s to the network, because, of course, those are not network devices. And it worked. I don't know how, but it did. Okay, the floppy data cables are thinner ribbon cables, and there is a twist in the middle, or in the end of the cable, where the A drive is plugged in. So the A drive goes past the twist, and that's in your test. So the A drive goes on the end, and the middle connector is for additional B drive, if you want one. Motherboards usually have one floppy drive connector. I saw a power supply yesterday that had two bird connectors on it, which was kind of interesting. But motherboards generally are going to have one floppy connector. These connectors are usually keyed. If you plug in the drive the wrong way around, the drive's activity light will stay lit constantly, and if a disk is inside it, track 0 will be removed. The drive will not be damaged, your media might be though, but the drive will be okay. Simply turn the computer off and redo the cable. That was a question that came up with quite a bit of frequency on the older version of this course. I'm not sure how often you'll see that one now, but they'll say, if our drive's light is constantly on, what do you do? It just means the data cable's in backwards. When all of the internal cables are connected, we're going to put the panels back on the case and plug in the external cables. So close it up and plug in all the external stuff. make sure to secure the case with all of the correct screws that you used when you unscrewed it or when you opened it up. If you're unsure how to close your case up, consult its documentation as you the same way you would if you weren't sure how to open it. Let's talk about some name some external cables, guys.
Power supply.
Yes, you're right. The power connector. The DVI, that's good. What else?
Monitor.
Monitor, good.
USB
yeah, printer.
Hub.
Yeah, USB cables. Very good. Mark.
I was going to say USB. I guess I'll say parallel now.
Yeah, parallel. Keyboard, mouse, Ethernet, all kinds of good stuff. So those are external cables. Headphones, speakers, that kind of stuff. Be careful to connect all cables to the proper place. For example, the mouse and keyboard cables can be mixed up. Always plug in the power cord last. And do not force any cable because you could damage it and or the motherboard or the connector. Now, after we've gotten all of this stuff plugged in, and hopefully we've plugged it all in correctly, it is time to boot the computer for the first time. When the computer is booted, the basic input-output system, BIOS, B-I-O-S, performs a check on all of the internal components. This is called the POST, or Power On Self Test, and this checks to see that all of the hardware in the computer is operating correctly. If a device is malfunctioning, an error or a beep code alerts the technician that there is a problem. Okay? Typically, well, it's not as typically as it used to be, but a single beep denotes the computer is functioning properly. And I remember our old computer would just go beep, you know, just once, and it said, okay, things are working. Newer computers have stopped doing this, which makes me very sad. If there is a hardware problem, however, the computer might emit a series of beeps. Each BIOS manufacturer uses different codes to indicate hardware problems. For a list of beep codes for your BIOS and motherboard, check the documentation of the motherboard or have a look on the web. There's a table listing some sample
Gary's
beep
did
codes
this morning.
In the curriculum. You did, or yeah, yours did.
Gary turned his on this morning and went beep, 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 beep. Yep, it made beep codes this morning. It was actually a fan failure warning because the fan hadn't spun up and the BIOS hadn't seen the fan spin up, so it was complaining, going, you have a fan failure. He turned it off and turned it on again.
Oh.
It was all good. But yeah, we saw that this morning.
Oh, wow, okay. So if you want to hear some beep codes yourself and you don't have a computer that's currently doing them, you can actually find a lot on YouTube, and I actually did this because I forget which lecture it wanted. We wanted the one for a blank screen, and I found it. Many people want to know what it means, that why their computer's beeping, and so they'll just put a video up and say, what is this doing? It's interesting to hear the different variations in beep codes, so if you want to hear about some of those, or hear some, you can have a play on YouTube. It's amazing what you can find on there. So we're going to talk about the BIOS in this last, I think this is the last section here. So far, the BIOS is inaccessible to us.
It is.
You can use a KNFB reader to work on the BIOS if you're very patient, or you can get a PC Weasel card for a desktop, and someone has offered to possibly do a CaviCast on it, which if they do, that would be really awesome. You can control settings such as boot order of devices, power management, access to the BIOS with a password, and it's not a great idea for us because we'll have trouble knowing when that comes up, and more. There's a lot of things you can control in the BIOS, and we have a recording which you can use for the lab, and I believe it's the boot, like 3.9.2 or whatever. It's the last lab.
Yep.
And Karen did a wonderful recording. The order won't match the lab, so you will have to do rewind and fast forward and, you know, look for the answers. But it's a very well done recording, and I found it awesome. And It's a good idea if you have the opportunity to have someone go over your BIOS with you for a general overview. You could record this as well if you want to. And the notes also give a bit of detail about the different sections that you might find at, you know, general sections you might find at the end. I know Carrie had a friend go over theirs and was considering putting it up. Are you still thinking of doing that?
I've got to take the F word out of it.
Fair enough.
And the S word.
Fair enough.
Cameron likes to swear at the BIOS.
Well, it's understandable, I think. Probably, but yeah, this might want to go away.
Yeah, we'll sort that out, but he's quite dumb. And no, I'm not going to use the auto-sensor feature of Goldwave, sorry.
So funny, you could put different sounds in for everything. Maybe I should try and do it.
But we will put that up.
That'd be a good exercise.
Yeah, it probably would, but we will put that up at some point. He reads very quickly, so keep in mind he's going to say things like, okay, you got standard CMOS, you got time, you got date, you got this, 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 you got right. And then when this one, we've got this, we've got this, we've got this, we've got this. So it'll be a very quick run through the BIOS, but there's a lot of it.
Yeah, so if you're, you, although a lot of us can understand JAWS at fast speeds, we might be just, just fine, I don't know. Okay. Yeah, I think that will be cool to get two of them of different perspectives of different BIOSes, because they will be different ones, and that'll be cool. My dad and I had our... Absolutely, the motherboard manual would be a good place to look for some of that stuff, too. That's a good point.
Actually,
my dad and I had a brief run through
of
my
out.
Netbook one.
It's it is actually all spelt out, but you have to be a really patient blind person to go, okay, I want a down arrow 6 times, press enter, down arrow twice, right arrow once, press plus 4 times, then press escape twice, F10, Y, and enter. It can be done, but you're a more patient person than I am.
Me too.
Is that how the key combinations are organized, or...?
Well, yeah, pretty
well,
much.
Well, there's menus in there, and... Yeah, there's menus in there, and you... There's different things. My dad and I did a brief run-through of my netbook one. We were trying to see if it actually had Bluetooth that was disabled. It turns out this one doesn't, but we thought it might be turned off in there. It was actually a pretty boring BIOS. I was, yeah. Okay, we have a quiz. And, so let's go ahead and do this. And, we'll then be fairly done, I think. Everybody get into your chat windows. Okie dokie, here is the first number one. A technician is installing a new power supply in a computer. Which type of power connector should be used to connect to a CD-ROM? Is it A, Berg, B, Mini-Molex, C, Molex, D, 20-pin ATX connector? Answer now. That is correct. The answer is C, Molex. Very good. 2. A technician is installing a new power supply in a computer. Which type of power connector should be used to connect to an ATX motherboard? Is it A, Berg, B, Mini-Molex, C, Molex, D, 20-pin ATX connector? Answer now. Yeah, they pretty much gave you that one, didn't they? It's D, a 20-pin ATX connector.
Is there such a thing as a Mini-Molex?
No,
there,
it's a red herring.
I don't know, is there?
No, it's a red herring. It's meant to confuse you. It's like thermal heat sink tape. It doesn't exist. It's
heat sink glue or something. That was awesome.
Yeah, there is a really odd one that was in there, yeah. Number 3. When installing a new CPU, which item will help maintain even contact and heat distribution between the CPU and heat sink? This might be what we're talking about. A. Silicone spray. B. Graphite paste. C. Glue. D. Thermal compound. Answer now.
Oh, and I just was talking about that question 2 seconds ago. I'm sorry.
I know.
That's
okay.
Easy.
It's thermal compound. Yeah. Graphite paste. That sounds bad. Yep, thermal compound. Very good. Number 4. When installing a CPU in a ZIF socket, how should the technician align the pins to avoid damage? A. Pin 1 is always aligned with the opposite corner from the base lever. B. Pin 1 on the CPU is aligned with pin 1 on the socket. C. Pin 1 is aligned with the corner closest to the memory. D. The removed corner of the CPU is always aligned with the corner opposite pin 1. Answer now. B is right. Pin 1 goes with pin 1. Pin 1 on the CPU is aligned with pin 1 on the socket itself. Very good. Number 5. A technician is installing additional memory in a computer. How can the technician guarantee that the memory is correctly aligned? I'm sorry, I almost read that wrong. A. The label on the memory module should always face the CPU. B. A notch in the memory module should be aligned with a notch in the memory slot. C. The arrows on the memory module should be aligned with the arrows on the motherboard slot. Or D. All memory and motherboard slots are color-coded with one red end and one blue end. Answer now. The answer is B. A notch in the memory module should be aligned with a notch in the memory slot. Can you imagine if they were color-coded? What a pain for us that would be anyway. Number 6. When mounting a motherboard in a computer case, what is used to prevent the motherboard from touching the bottom of the case? A. Standoffs. B. Ground vault isolators. C. Silicone spray. D. Grounding straps. Choose now. A. Standoffs. Absolutely. I don't even know what some of those other things are.
I want a B. I don't know what it is, but I want one.
Yeah, that sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, ground vault isolators. I don't even know what that is. Okay. Number 7.
It's very techno babble.
I know, that's probably why they put it in. When installing multiple drives, what is the name given to the drive that is attached to the middle connector on a PATA cable? Is it A, secondary drive, B, master drive, C, middle drive, D, redundant drive, or E, slave drive? Answer now. All over the place. The answer is E, it's a slave drive. You've got the master drive on the end and the slave drive in the middle. I find that very easy to remember, but that's just me because I'm 12. Okay, number 8. When installing adapter cards in a computer, how should a technician properly secure the card? A. Install the card and attach it to the expansion slot using thermal paste. B. Install the card and attach it to the motherboard using thermal pads. C. Install the card and secure it using metal retaining clips located on the expansion slot. Or D. Install the card and secure it to the case with a screw. Answer now. The answer is D. Install the card into the expansion slot and secure it to the case with a screw. Some of those are really odd answers, too. I'm trying not to laugh, because some of those are just so bizarre. Number 9. Which two connectors are used to connect external peripherals? Choose two. So this would be yes, no. A. EIDE. Yes or no. Absolutely no, that's an internal cable. B. Molex. Absolutely, those are internal as well, so no. C. PATA. Yes or no. Absolutely, that is no. How about PS2? That is correct. Those are your keyboard and mouse connectors. And E, USB. Yes, absolutely. I hope those are external cables. All right, that is the end of the quiz. Are there questions, things to talk about?
Wow.
That's it.
That was done in a record time.
Not a short one. I know, and I didn't think. I don't think I even skipped anything.
Much longer.
We usually take like 2 days to do this one.
Yeah, I'm really surprised.
You screamed through.
And we've got half an hour, so.
We do.
I know.
Any...
Did it seem like I should have gone slower? I'm just curious.
No, everything was there. I mean, to be honest, a lot of this stuff is picked up by listening to the recordings, and I'm going to put Ellie's and Tom's and Brian's up today. You'll get a lot more out of listening to the recordings.
Yeah.
And then if you're local here in Perth, you'll watch Gary curse and swear and stuff at the computer he'll be taking apart.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're doing that this week or waiting for the other two to do it.
I thought you were going to wait for Marion and
Alex is sick this week, so I'm not sure what we're going to do.
We'll talk about that. It wouldn't hurt him to do it twice.
Nah.
I'll try very hard not to use Kerry's famous F words.
Oh, we don't care.
Yeah.
We're not recording.
It's not being recorded, so you can say whatever you want there.
Yes,
well,
but
thank you for this. I'm going to go because my battery is running down. But have a good
Okay, enjoy.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Have fun. Yeah. Bert, you had something?
Yeah, there's a round thing that I see on the motherboard of this, whatever they call it. I can't remember what they call it now, but the small form factor Dell I've got here that I'm talking to you guys on. And I just saw on this really old motherboard on this broken computer that someone drug over here to take a look at. It's round. I would say, let me take a good look here. Diameter, I would say maybe about two centimeters at the most, an inch. I'd say a little less than an inch, maybe 2 centimeters round. And there are four little things that retain it on the side that come up from the
CMOS
motherboard.
CMOS battery.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
No, hang on. It might be the PC speaker. Has it got sort of a bulgy magnety thing on it? Because you find if a screwdriver will stick to it, it'll be a PC speaker. And they're retained by two things around the edges.
No, this isn't where the speaker is at all. No, this has got to be the battery. Yeah. It's pretty thin. And it's got four little things that hold it to the motherboard around on the sides.
That's your battery.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah, we don't actually talk about that.
It's surprising.
I mean, did the chapter tell?
That will come. The chapter may have talked about.
I think it's 11.
More in the.
I think
you're right. We will talk about that. But basically keeps your BIOS settings saved and your clock in the system keeping time. And so if your system's losing time or your BIOS settings are going away, then you'll want to check and maybe replace this battery. Any other questions, concerns? Rob, what you got?
I have a Dell Dimension 2400 with a floppy drive has quit working quite some time ago. And I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay. The floppy drive has quit working some time ago, and not having used a floppy drive very often, I haven't had particularly reason to investigate into it. But I'm wondering if could there be damaged or kinked up cable, or has the drive itself gone bad, or what do you think the problem is?
It could be a loose cable, or it could be that drive has just given up the ghost. Either one of those is a possibility. Have somebody look for you and see if the light is on in the front of it, or reach into your computer and have a feel and make sure that those cables are plugged in and it hasn't come loose. Otherwise, really, it's a floppy drive. You can just...
You can get a USB floppy drive if you really have to have one.
No, they're $5 on eBay for the real thing, if you want the real thing. They're not expensive.
No, they're really not, and they work well. They do the job just fine.
Some people still use them. It's not very common, but if you've got a pile of floppy disks and you've got stuff on the floppy disks, then sometimes they can be quite handy. Most of us have moved towards flash drives, but there are certainly people who've got you know, half a ton of floppy disks that they're probably never going to use again, but at least if you've got the drive, you can read them.
Now, I wonder how many of them are ones that they used to get from AOL that they just used to erase and reuse, because we did that all the time. They used to send out loads of them.
No, they used to send us CDs. That's how they stopped us.
At least we got discs first. You got discs first, and then they went to CDs.
I heard they make good frisbees.
They do.
Yeah. You can hear someone on Blind Cool Tech stomping on one and scratch it, you know, scraping it all over the ground and all kinds of stuff if you really want to.
Okay.
Little kids entertained too.
Anything else?
Any other questions before I hit stop? Because we can certainly talk about how to microwave CDs, which we don't recommend, after I've hit stop on the record.
I've got a question about the HDD diagnostic lab 222. I'm very close to being done with it, but it asks for the file name and file size, and I'm wondering if you can get that data without installing the program.
Yes.
You would have to download it. You can download it, possibly. Or it should be...
Sometimes it'll say it.
Some sites will list it.
The one I did, which was Western Digital's thing,
if you Google
they actually
a lot, you
had a little table where they would put the file size.
If you download it, too, I mean, you don't really have to install it, but what I've done is, for mine, I downloaded...
Download it and delete it.
Well, yeah, you could delete it, but you would just go into your properties of the file itself, and it tells you the size on the disk, and obviously the file name. You know, if you've downloaded it, then you get the file name. But usually what I would just do is just download the file, get the properties, go into the properties, and it tells you the size on disk. You have to kind of root JAWS to PC, and that's what I do, and that's what it tells me there. But that if they don't say the file size, just download it and go into the file's properties by going to the file, you know, and
then
just
press Alt Enter.
Applications key. Oh yeah, well that's
Alt Enter pulls up the property too.
Yep.
That works in a lot of places.
True.
It shouldn't be a big file. It's only a few megabytes, so it's not. I mean, you guys don't usually have bandwidth caps over there anyway. But, yeah, if you hit save and then save it out somewhere, you'll be able to check how big it is. That's probably the easiest way to do it.
I had fun updating firmware on a hard drive and disabling its virtual CD manager a couple weeks ago.
Ooh.
That was fun. It worked just fine, but it's one of those things, it's a firmware upgrade, and I got really scared. And then this week I had fun with firmware upgrade too, which I'll tell you about. Well, some of you already heard, but had one fail this week.